Yeah. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is a Monday morning. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've got Gary Gillespie is going to join us. He was a former truck driver who has written a book called Chronicles of the Unexplained. These are stories from the road that are just a little bit weird and kind of spooky. And we'll do that. Classic Carson. We always play Johnny Carson. You can watch the Johnny Carson show every night on Antenna TV. And I suggest that you do. We're going to play a couple of clips that involve Walter Matthau. Legendary Walter Matthau. He appeared on the show several times. Was always great. So we're going to play a couple of clips of Walter Matthau. So that's coming up. We've got some unexplained phenomena that we're going to get into as well. 312-981-7200. Also a case for boredom since we're all kind of stuck. Speaking of being stuck inside on the quarantine, we're watching a lot of TV. We're trying to keep busy. We were talking about some of the DIY projects that people are doing. But we've been watching a lot of movies. And one of the reasons why we always have this extra topic here is Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me. We got some new movies to talk about, but we also pick movies that you can binge because we're all stuck inside. So we talked about comedies, we talked about action movies, and this morning we're going to talk about sci-fi, great science fiction movies that you can check out. So let's welcome the guys. Here's Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
And Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi there.
Eric, how you holding up?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, I mean, this is pretty much how I live my life anyway. So I stay in pretty often. So yeah. I mean, I'm luxurious enough to work at home. So yeah, it's not that much different. You know, I don't get stir crazy the way some people do. I do miss movie theaters, though.
Yeah. I think we all do. How are you holding up, Steve?
I'm good. I don't stay in as much, but I will admit I'm not the best quarantiner. I find excuses to step out, not be around people necessarily, but just get out, walk around, find some errand to run, like that doesn't involve like grocery stores, preferably. But like, yeah, I'm out and about, but I'm also very safe. I adopted the mask before many others did. So,
Okay, all right, well. There we go. We're all dealing with it. And again, like you, Eric, this isn't much, you know, what's going on right now. It's pretty much how I've been living my life, too.
Right.
You know, inside watching TV, reading, that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, we'll get through this, man. We will get through this.
We will.
We got some movies that we want to get to here. Let's see. Chewy says, hey, great show. There was a really good family-friendly wrestling movie on Netflix called The Main Event. It has quite a few WWE wrestlers in it, like The Miz. I've not heard of that.
I just heard about that tonight, actually.
The Main Event, the only movie that I know of a Main Event is Barbara Streisand and Ryan O'Neal.
That's right.
That's the only one that I know of. Let's see. 815 says, don't know if this is science fiction, but I can't help but think of The Omega Man. Yeah, that's science fiction.
Oh yeah.
With Charlton Heston. Maybe it's a little bit of what we're experiencing now. Thanks for being the normal during the night.
I have noticed that a lot of science fiction very typically crosses over into other genres like horror or action. So it was, I tried to put a list together that was more or less pure science fiction, although I'm sure I failed on some level. But yeah, it's just something that's only science fiction. It's almost impossible to find.
Yeah.
But it's fine.
864 says, my favorite sci-fi movie is the 1958 version of The Fly starring Vincent Price. The ending of the film used to scare me with that high-pitched buzzing help me squeal that the guy's screaming. And it's a very ugly, it has a human head and a human arm attached to Fly's body. Yeah, okay. I prefer the Cronenberg version, quite frankly. But
sure. Yeah, me too.
847 says, one of my favorite science fiction movies was the original The Day the Earth Stood Still. I probably won't be able to hear your discussion, but I wanted to voice my opinion. Yeah, the original Day the Earth Stood Still is great.
Mm-hmm.
The remake with Keanu is terrible.
Yep.
All right. Well, we got it. We do have a new movie to review. This is odd. Well, first of all, you guys have a couple here that we're going to talk about here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Eric, what is We Summon the Darkness?
This is a horror film. It stars Alexandra Daddario as one of a trio of young female friends who are going to see sort of a metal concert or hard rock concert that they're taking a road trip towards. Once they get there, as everyone's tailgating, they meet up with a group of guys who are also doing the same. And they basically go back to Daddario's home and have some drinks and do some talking. And things get out of hand from there. It's one of these movies that you don't really want to reveal too much because the turns come pretty quick and really kind of spoil what I think is sort of the best stuff in the movie, which is basically the first half of the movie that kind of subverts some of your expectations of exactly what you come to expect in movies like this. It has a lot of fun with that. I should also mention that Johnny Knoxville is in the film as a very anti-devil pastor who's on television preaching the word of God. He has some fun with his role. And I think the first half of this movie has the best stuff in it, like I said, where it sort of subverts the genre. Once it kind of hits a brick wall at one point where it just kind of has to settle in to then deliver the normal genre goods, but doesn't do it really in any more interesting fashion that we've seen any time before. So it's like half of a recommendation. It's definitely different, and I think that the cast is having fun with it. I just think that, like a lot of movies of its type, all of the best ideas are in the first half, and then it just kind of has to just go through by the numbers from there. Not bad, but for a VOD horror movie, certainly one of the better ones.
Okay, that's We Summon the Darkness. What did you think, Steve?
Yeah, I'm about where Eric is. A couple things you should mention. It's set in 1988, and it's also... It's also like a bit of a comedy too. So it feels lighter than the subject matter. It's sort of told against the backdrop. One of the things Johnny Knoxville is talking about on TV is he's decrying heavy metal music, and because he thinks it's connected to Satan. And there's this sort of backdrop story going on that we see in like headlines and news reports about these satanic murders that have been going on in this part of the country, wherever they are, California or wherever. And so we kind of, when we get these groups of three men and three women together, we immediately sort of start to suspect where this is going. And like Eric said, it does subvert particularly gender expectations of horror movies in general. And like he said, I don't want to ruin any of the what I think are fairly obvious surprises, but I will say that the blood really does start to flow rather freely from, like the big reveal on. It's a really violent film, even though there's a lot of sort of laughing and cackling and just manic behavior. And the reasons for these, there's a lot of killing, and the reasons for the killing are kind of ridiculous, and as it becomes revealed in the second half of the movie, it just feels a little much, a little silly. I will say that the filmmakers kind of keep the humor going throughout the proceedings, especially when it comes to like stabbing and shooting and whatever else. And there's this like industrial sized rotary brush thing that I've never seen before, and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And there's like a really great sort of pulsating synth score that I liked a lot.
All right, we have to break.
Okay,
Steve.
Sure.
But that's a kind of a recommendation from both of you. Of you guys on that, and we'll come back with more movies here on 720 WGN.
Darkest of night, with the moon shining bright. There's a set going strong, a lot of things going on. The man of the hour has an air of great power. The dudes have envied him for so long. Oh, super fly. You're gonna make your fortune by and by. But if you lose, don't ask no questions.
Yeah. The only
game you
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Coming up after 1 o'clock, we're going to be talking with Gary Gillespie, who is the author of Chronicles of the Unexplained. He was a former trucker who's seen some very strange stuff out on the road. Kind of creepy. We'll get into that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Steve Procopi and Eric Childress join me every week to talk new movies, and since we're all stuck inside, we're giving suggestions on what you can binge watch, and we're going to be jumping down the world of sci-fi to give you some recommendations for that. Eric is here. All right, Eric.
Hello.
And Steve.
Hey there.
Okay. All right, Steve, tell us about Sea Fever.
Yeah, like, to be honest, I'm not sure a lot of people are going to be able to handle what's going on in this movie. It's a very atmospheric, contagion-based thriller from Ireland. And Sea Fever is about this small crew on a fishing vessel that encounters a mysterious sea creature that appears to contaminate the boat with a parasitic infection. And those on board are sort of at odds about the decision to either return to land to get help, medical help, or stay at sea and sort of wait out this possible contamination to see who has this illness that makes your eyeballs explode out of your head. There's an actress named Hermione Corfield who plays a marine biology student. She's on board to sort of run behavior experiments on whatever happens with the catches that they get. But the sea captain is played by Doug Ray Scott, and he takes his vessel into this sort of forbidden area of the sea, and that's where this thing comes and infects their boat. So the students struggle to, like, identify this parasite and understand what it does and eventually how to kill it. Hopefully seems very real in this current climate, and everyone's pushing her, rushing her, do it now, which of course is not the way science or research works. So, but again, that feels very familiar. Everyone's very impatient and angry at her for not being able to solve this faster. There's a couple of real scares in the film, but Sea Fever is sort of more interested in sustained low-grade tension, and there's plenty of that. I also like the way the film sort of blends in Irish folklore and seagoing folklore into a story that sort of celebrates facts and data, especially there's sort of like superstitions that a lot of the sailors have connected to the sea. Even the students' red hair is a thing that bothers them because not supposed to have people with red hair on boats, I guess. I don't know. The film is really grimy and feels cramped, and it certainly looks like it doesn't smell very good either, and the ending is a bit ambiguous. In the point where they, you know, it feels like the filmmaker couldn't quite bring it home, but man, what comes before is really solid filmmaking, and I'll pay the filmmaker the ultimate compliment. I can't wait to see what they do next. So, okay. Yeah,
all
it's
right.
Good.
Okay, cool. All right, Eric, what do you think?
Yeah, I liked it very much too, and I think we might have talked about this a bit back in when I at the Toronto Film Festival last year. That's where I first saw it. Needless to say, I can only imagine how it plays now. This obviously was not top of mind back last September when I saw this. But the thing that I liked about this one that I think kind of sets it apart from, you know, there are a lot of comparisons people are trying to make to John Carpenter's The Thing, which is, you know, I mean, in spirit, okay, but that's, you know, you're talking about like the highest grade possible of isolation movies with a monster, and this one's definitely not that, but what I did like about this one more than, you know, a lot of these other ones is that it doesn't go so much for kind of over the top horror, and I mean that in regards to the behavior of the crew. Yes, there is some clearly some tension, and there's a lot of frayed nerves and things like that. But when the closer they come to understanding the virus. Or understanding the monster, or understanding how dire the situation is, they begin to act like, you know, responsible human beings to some extent. And that was something that I really appreciated in sort of the back half of this movie. And everything Steve said is right. The ending is, you know, might leave a little desire for a lot of people, but the ride is definitely worth taking.
Okay. All right. There you go. Sea Fever. Okay. Eric, tell us about Trolls World Tour.
Well, this is a sequel to the 2016 hit film, Trolls. Once again, stars the voice work of Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake. And in this film and this follow-up, we find out that the troll world is much more expansive than we were led to believe in the first one. The first one, it was just, all the trolls, they were like Smurfs. They were just there, and they were all happy and singing and, having a good time and everything. But in this one, we discovered that there actually have been factions of trolls that have actually separated themselves. Six of them, as a matter of fact, including the originals. And they've all been separated by their love of a certain type of music. So you have you have your classical music, you have your hard rock, you have pop represented by the Kendrick faction. Even yodeling has its own faction, and these factions have been represented by six strings of a guitar. And when they all couldn't decide which one should be the universal language of music, they each took their string and went into their corners. Well, now the queen of hard rock, portrayed voiced by Rachel Bloom, is trying to consolidate and trying to retrieve all the strings from all the troll factions and basically consolidate everything into a hard rock universe. And her character seems very much inspired by a combination of a teenage goth and the Doof Warrior from Mad Max Fury Road, and Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake's characters are set off to try to, intercept her and reason with her. And, Kendrick's character is very poppy, is very optimistic, and hopes they can be best friends and solve their differences, but that's not exactly the way things are going to play out in this one. So I did the interesting thing today and watched both Trolls movies back-to-back. I had never seen. I had somehow missed the original Trolls film and felt that I would be very lost if I just delved into this one, not knowing that this one actually opens with a bit of a recap of who the characters are and what they represent. So thanks for that. But not only did I find the original Trolls movie to be mostly enjoyable, I kind of had the exact same reaction to this one too. I think the concept of the movie that we've seen in variations before, from The Land Before Time to Pixar films and whatnot, on how the separation and differences should not be, everyone should not be in their corner. We should all try to find out what makes us not only unique, but similar, so we can all get along in this world. And I like that, that's obviously a very positive message, particularly in this day and age. This is certainly not a movie for music snobs in any way. The film, very much like the first one, that leans into its pop-centric or sort of modern pop-centric universe. Sometimes it wants to be Moulin Rouge, and other times it's just like whatever the current one-hit wonder is on the radio. So you're not exactly getting a lesson in musical history with this movie, but the thing that I was drawn to very much so, no pun intended, with both of the movies is the visual style. These movies have, the visuals in these movies, I think, are definitely not lazy in the way that I would describe the Illumination films, for example. I think the screenplay leaves a lot of hanging fruit and a lot of stuff that they could tackle in a much more interesting fashion. The addition of Sam Rockwell as a country troll is pretty fantastic in this one. There are definitely some laughs along the way. Timberlake's got a new song on the soundtrack that I like quite a bit. So like both movies, I was sort of like riding the fence on both of them. I like the visuals. I like a lot of individual moments in the film, and they ultimately add up to sort of just enough of a recommendation for me. The original Trolls is actually kind of an interesting movie to revisit in these times as well. But I liked it.
Okay. All right. Eric, Steve, hang on.
Yep.
And we'll come back and we'll find out what Steve thought of Trolls World Tour. I'll tell you what I thought of it, and then we're going to recommend some sci-fi movies for you to binge while you're stuck at home. Thank you. delegation with Oh Honey. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. We're here until 4 a.m. Coming up after 1 o'clock, we're going to talk with Gary Gillespie, who is the author of Chronicles of the Unexplained. Former truck driver who has seen some very weird stuff on the road. We'll talk about that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Eric and Steve join me every week to talk movies. And in this time when we're all quarantined, we're giving you some titles that you can binge watch while you're stuck inside. Here's Eric. And
hello.
Here's Steve.
Hello.
Okay, before the break, we heard a review of Trolls World Tour from Eric. Steve, where do you stand on this?
Yeah, the movie isn't any better or worse, I don't think, than the original Trolls, and that's probably going to be just fine for most of the people sort of clamoring to rent this thing. I think the messages, the true messages of the film kind of emerge in the second half. In the first film, the themes were more like vague and free-floating ideas about love and hugs and dancing and just feeling better about yourself. And this time around, it's a little bit more grounded in real-world issues like cultural appropriation and diversity. Not everyone has to like the same music, and fighting just because others don't agree with you or that you don't like, they don't like the same things as you. None of these messages are thrown in your face, but they're fairly easy to spot. I really liked, even with all these great voice talents here, I mean, we definitely mentioned Kelly Clarkson is this sort of velvet-throated country singer. Anderson .Paak is in here. George Clinton and Mary J. Blige are the king and queen of the funk trolls, of course. I love that Ozzy Osbourne is the king of the rock trolls, is King Thrash, and you still can't understand him. Like, I don't know anything that he said in this movie. But it's another example of some great casting. The question is, like, during one of the darkest times on the planet, is the trolls vibe exactly what we need? I think probably it might be. One of the reasons I love the first film is the music, not so much the obligatory covers, but these new songs. And actually, as he did in the first film, Timberlake actually has written a lot of the new songs in this film. He doesn't perform them all, but there's one he sings called Perfect for Me that's heartbreaking. It's like a love song that has just killed me. And then there's another song that Kelly Clarkson sings called Born to Die that I don't even know what it's doing in this movie, but it's a great song. Timberlake co-wrote it with Chris Stapleton. Like, it's a magnificent song, and it's for like a kid's movie, it's pretty heavy. But this is an above average animated thing that hopefully will take your mind off the world for about 90 minutes, and it's got a handful of great new songs to hum along to. And I gotta say, like, I hope not too many other studios, big studios, put out their films like this, release their films like this. I mean, but right now Universal pretty much has the only game in town for the month of April in terms of new releases. So I don't know, Eric, if there were actual box office numbers on this, but I got to imagine they were pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think they've released anything so far. How much people have spent on it this weekend. We'll probably start seeing those tomorrow, I think.
Yeah. Well, I like both of these movies. I think they're both really fun. I think the voice work is great. The music, as you mentioned, Steve, the music in this is terrific. It's just absolutely terrific. It's just a very entertaining movie. It's colorful. I had a good time. It took my mind off of the nonsense for 90 minutes. I found myself smiling and kind of tapping my fingers and, you know, and digging what was going on. And I like these movies. I think they're both really fun and creative and very entertaining. So I'm recommending Trolls World Tour. I think it's really cool. And watch it on Prime Video in the comfort of your own home. And I think your kids will love it too. So, all right. So sci-fi is where we're going. To recommend for people who were all stuck inside. So, Eric, let's start with you. You split it up into the streaming services where you can watch them. So the first one is from Netflix, and perhaps my favorite science fiction movie of all time is the first one that you're mentioning.
Yeah, go big and stay home.
Yeah,
Yeah, Ridley Scott's Blade Runner.
Yeah,
is available on Netflix. You know, quite simply, I think one of the best science fiction movies ever made. It's certainly a dour film, but also an exciting film, a scary film, a beautiful film to look at. What more needs to be said? It's Blade Runner, for God's sake.
Yeah. And I think both of us, Steve and I, would echo that.
Of course.
I mean, one of the greatest movies of all time.
Might be the most influential science fiction film in terms of its visuals like ever made.
No,
honestly.
And it's still, the thing is, I mean, that movie came out in 1982, and you watch it, now, and it still holds up.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, those effects are still the effects are still astonishing. And what can you say about Rutger Hauer, man? I mean,
yeah.
So, but no, I love that movie. Okay, from Netflix on Steve's side, you want to go with Ex Machina?
Yeah, no, that's Alex Garland's first directing effort. I just love it. It's such a weird concept, this sort of bizarre love triangle with this sort of Silicon Valley bro and then this very appealing, ever-learning synthetic robot lady. And then, the audience stand-in is Domhnall Gleeson, who just sort of is enamored with this robot. And over just a weekend, they talk through philosophy and drink themselves stupid and dance and discover, honestly, the ramifications of reckless innovation. And it's elegant and rambunctious and terrifyingly prescient, and it becomes more relevant, I think, as the years go on.
Yeah, I agree. I love that movie. Okay, Eric, your next one on Netflix is The Endless.
Yeah, and this is from Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead, are two filmmakers that more people need to be made aware of. They made a movie called Spring, which is basically Before Sunset had a monster in it many years ago. And this one, The Endless, is about these two brothers who were once in they lived in a commune that might have actually been a cult. And they're sort of drawn back into his world many years later as adults, and discover the weird things that are going on around them. Again, it's interesting science fiction. It's original, and it takes twists and turns you don't see coming. It's frightening, and it's just, I mean, people need to know about these guys. They have another new film called Synchronic that's going to be coming out, hopefully this year. I saw that at Toronto last year as well, but keep an eye on these guys, and The Endless is one to check out.
Okay, all right. Next on Netflix on Steve's side, I love this movie. Sam Rockwell has already been mentioned once already. Moon.
There's something so poetic about the feature debut from David Bowie's son, Duncan Jones. It's about a guy alone on the moon. And it's basically just like a one-man show for Rockwell. I think it's my favorite performance of his ever, and there's a lot to choose from, but I think this is mine. And he just plays a sort of lone operator on this mining outpost on the moon, and he's almost done with his three-year shift, and he's excited to be going home, and then things start going wrong, and it's sort of about loneliness and identity and boredom, and you kind of expect that, but then there's sort of bigger things going on here that are more interesting. And then there's this HAL-like computer voiced unfortunately by Kevin Spacey, and he's sort of facing the possibility of death alone on this sort of cold rock. And and it shouldn't be this appealing, but man, Rockwell and Duncan Jones really make us consider these themes of and what it is, what human life really is. And it's thought-provoking and exciting and just such a great acting exercise.
Yeah, I agree. I love that movie. Okay, also on Netflix, it's Eric Childress and Steve Procopi, and we're helping you out as we're all stuck inside. We wanted to tell you about some great science fiction movies that you can binge. Also available on Netflix, Into the Forest, Eric.
Yeah, and the thing with science fiction is that sometimes, it rubs up against exactly the kind of the very thing you don't want to be thinking about at this time. This one stars Ellen Page and Evan Rachel Wood as sisters who find themselves, holed up in the forest after some mysterious pandemic has occurred, and it's a survival story, which I very much like. The first time in this movie, I was a little mixed on it, the second time on it, after, you know, we had actually played it at our film festival a couple years ago, it sold me on it a bit more. The two of them are really terrific in the movie, and if you like survival stories, you like end of the world type movies, this one is definitely very interesting with a feminine spin on it.
Yeah, and those two are two of my favorite actresses alive.
So, yeah.
Steve, your next one, which is also available on Netflix, is actually one of my favorite Steven Spielberg movies of all time.
Yeah, agreed. And one of many Philip K. Dick titles that will come. Well, we've already talked about Blade Runner, but there's more coming. Minority Report, set in 2054. It's about a pre-crime division of the police. Tom Cruise is the head of it. We should also mention this is a really good opportunity to reacquaint yourself with a great Max von Sydow performance in this. Tom Cruise plays the head of this pre-crime thing, and they actually use... three precognizant people who can predict crimes that are going to happen. They can go arrest those people before the crimes are committed. And of course, there's issues about the ethics of that. But then when Tom Cruise's character gets, they come to arrest him for killing someone that he doesn't even know, he kind of tries to seek out these precogs and find out, like, solve the mystery of his own future, of this own future murder that he's going to commit. Samantha Morton plays that precog, and she's phenomenal in this and just so odd. And it's a great, like, thriller, but the science fiction is almost secondary. It's a great, it's a terrific use of, and they used futurists, and Spielberg used futurists in this to, and it you can tell because a lot of the things we see that are happening only like 30 years from now, 35 years are like, they just sort of treat them like they're no big deal. They don't like call attention to the science part of the science fiction, and it's actually makes a huge difference in this film. So I love this movie.
I do too. I absolutely love it. Okay, guys, hang on. And Eric and Steve are with us, and when we come back, we got a few more science fiction titles to recommend for you to binge while you're stuck inside here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. Coming up after 1 o'clock, we will talk with Gary Gillespie, who is the author of Chronicles of the Unexplained. He was a former trucker who's come across some very weird things on the road. I also just want to take a moment to thank Adam Phillips, our engineer, our overnight engineer. He's wiping down everything right now. He's sanitizing everything and keeping up on top of that. And we thank Adam for all the work that he does, man. I just want to mention it on the air. So we're talking with Eric and Steve about science fiction movies. And so you can fill your time that you're stuck at home. And okay, guys.
Yeah.
We got a text here from Manny who says, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Not only cool, but different than others. Super intellectual, great music, and the title alone is awesome. That's one of my favorite movies of all time, Close Encounters. One of my favorites of all time.
Mm-hmm.
630 says Passengers with Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Okay. All right. Let's see. All right. We got a few more titles here that we want to get to. Also on Netflix. Her, you pick, Eric. Really great movie.
Yeah, Spike Jonze's film about Joaquin Phoenix, who basically forms a relationship with the help voice on his phone, or new phone, portrayed by Scarlett Johansson, which I think until Marriage Story last year was actually the best performance she's ever given, and it's only her voice.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is just so... this is like really, really subtle science fiction, but it, you know, it's set in a world that's not too far from our own. But it is such a lovely, sweet film, and you just, you know, you have all the feels watching this one.
Yeah, no, it's a great movie. It really is great. Okay, and on Netflix, on Steve's side, I Am Mother.
Yeah, I realize I might be in the minority on this one. This one is actually, I think, premiered. Well, it premiered at Sundance last year, but it debuted on. It never made it to theaters. It was on Netflix, and it's about this in the wake of humanity's extinction. There's a teenage girl who's raised by a robot that's voiced by Rose Byrne, and who will eventually be raised to repopulate the Earth. But they live in isolation and with no contact with the outside world or other humans, and this bond is sort of threatened when a stranger arrives from the outside, played by Hilary Swank, with alarming news and the truth about humanity's demise, and it just unsettles everything. It's a debut feature from a guy named Grant Spootor, who made a little bit look like a lot in terms of the production design and the effects, and I really was impressed by this film.
Wow, I've not seen that one.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have to look for that one. Okay. Eric, your next one, this is on Prime. Well, what can you say about this? Quiet Place.
Yeah, and we should be a few weeks into talking about A Quiet Place Part 2, as a matter of fact. But yeah. It was one of the first major films to be taken off of the release schedule. So you have plenty of time to catch up with it now. It's on Amazon Prime. Krasinski directed the hell out of this movie, and I think also gives a great performance in it alongside Emily Blunt. The sequel is now coming out September 4th, but you have a chance to catch up with this one. Lean, tight, beautiful 90-minute science fiction horror movie.
Yep, fantastic movie. Okay, on Amazon for you, Steve, Time Crimes.
Have you seen this one, Nick?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I was just about to say, I can't imagine that a film directed by Nacho Vigalondo, who made Colossal, is one you hadn't seen, but this is obviously the first film I had ever seen by him, the first feature he'd ever done.
Yep.
It's such a great, smart, simple idea. There's only four characters. It's a guy named Hector who moves into a new house with his wife, and one evening he's looking through his binoculars and sees a naked lady in the woods, and he kind of wanders into the woods for a closer look, and then he gets stabbed. And by someone he doesn't see, and that kind of sets off a cycle of events that lead him to a science lab and sort of changes his life twice in one day. And it's a fantastic thriller. It's a mystery, and above all else, it's a great time travel movie. And Vigalondo shows a real flair for complex storytelling, making it look simple, but it's actually kind of complicated. And he's clearly having a lot of fun doing it. He's also in the film as a lab worker. No special effects to speak of, really. Maybe none, actually. But it's just, if you haven't seen it, it's a real discovery.
It really is. It's a terrific movie. He's a fantastic filmmaker.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one that I love that about six people saw, Eric. Annihilation, super creepy movie.
Yeah, and Alex Garland, Steve already mentioned Ex Machina. Yeah. You know, I think about this movie, and maybe not the best movie to recommend now, considering what it's about, and you know, the behavior of the characters, and how this is a movie about self-destruction in a way, and you know, hopefully not a lot of people are feeling that way these days. But if you like really interesting science fiction that makes you think, you know, this one is gonna, you know, make you think in all different sorts of ways. It's a creepy movie about an alien occupation and the all-female team that goes in to investigate, led by Natalie Portman, and what they find not what you might expect.
Yeah.
Although it does have one of the creepiest monster scenes the last 3 years
ever. Yeah, ever. But by the way, the last 15 minutes of this movie completely freaked me out. I was I was like, what the hell is happening right now?
Yeah,
great movie. Okay, let's get through these a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
So a few more titles from Steve's side. Looper, which is a terrific movie.
Yeah.
And Under the Skin, which Scarlett Johansson is amazing in that movie.
I think it might be my, as Eric said, my second favorite of her performance.
Yeah. You didn't include Close Encounters of the Third Kind because you can't do a science fiction list and not have that movie on it.
Yeah, it's the drier the better for me in terms of science fiction. Sometimes especially all the stuff with the, like, Francois Truffaut, who, when I first saw this movie, I didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
But he just endeared me so much, and when I started figuring out who he was, I was like even more endeared by him as an actor. I mean,
and one of my very favorites of all time, Children of Men. I can't explain to you how much I love that movie.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorites. All right, Eric, you have Super 8.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of that one.
Yeah, J.J. Abrams doing a sort of a spiritual and literal reinvention of the Amblin Entertainment movies from the 1980s.
Yep. AI, another one I didn't like.
Yeah, that's my Steven Spielberg contribution to the list. This movie gets more beautiful every time I see it.
The Congress.
Yeah, The Congress is you can't even explain it in words. It's half live action, half animation with Robin Wright giving an amazing performance in this futuristic world where she's an actress, but more or less she's playing herself in the movie, or variation of herself. And I can't describe it in 20 words or less.
Okay. Invaders from Mars, the original.
Yeah, the 1953 movie, which next to the Body Snatchers film of that time, was one of my, and War of the Worlds was one of my favorite science fiction movies as a kid.
That's a great movie. Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the 1978 version.
Oh yeah,
yeah. If I'm going to choose one, that's the one I'm going with. That's one of my favorite creep films of all time. One of the great endings of all time. Love that version.
I do too. I love them all though. I'm one of those people.
Oh, yeah.
I love all four versions. I think they're all great. Here's Mark real quick on WGN. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I wanted to mention Colossus, the Forbin Project, which comes from the early 70s. It's about what could happen if computers ever took on a will of their own. And one thing that happens early on is that the American computer discovers its Russian counterpart, and they decide they want to work together. And the humans say no, and the computers say, well, we'll just destroy one of your cities. And so the humans give in, and the missile gets diverted, and the news says that it was a mistake. And, of course, the scientists know better. But one of the funnier aspects of the movie is when the scientist who invented the computer and one of his colleagues are trying to come up with a secret formula to destroy the computer. And what ends up happening is that he tells the computer, look, we need our privacy. You can't be watching me when we're doing our lovemaking. And so the computer gives into this. And it's funny because these are not supposed to be sexual partners, but it's clear that they're getting turned on by each other. And meanwhile, they do discuss the formula. They don't have sex. And when they try the formula, you know, it's just totally defeated. And the computer says, well, do you have anything else? And he's like, oh, boy. And then the computer says, for doing that to me, I will have two of your staff members killed. And the computer the movie ends with the computer scanning all sorts of pictures of the scientist who invented it and sort of giving the impression that he can't make a move without being watched.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there you go. Colossus. All right, real quickly here. Let's have you guys see, 847 says, have you guys seen the movie Primer? Yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's a great one.
Great one. Movie question for the crew. I noticed today that Up in Smoke is on Netflix. How did I miss that announcement? Probably because you were high.
Yeah. And I ignored it because it wasn't science fiction.
Yeah. We've got Monsters you picked, Explorers, which is a wildly underrated movie.
Joe Dante, man.
Yeah, great movie. And then for Steve, you picked Akira, Fast Color, 28 Days Later, District 9, The Adjustment Bureau, and Midnight Special, wildly underrated movie.
Yeah.
So, all right, guys, stay safe, be good, and we'll talk to you next week. We'll figure out another genre to let people binge on, okay?
Yep, sounds
all right,
good.
There they are. They'll be back again next week, Eric and Steve. And all right, we are going to take a break. We've got the news coming up. Then after the news, the author of Chronicles of the Unexplained, Gary Gillespie, will join us on 720 WGN.